Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
As the unforgettable and, we pray, unrepeatable year came to a close, the theater community was doing what pretty much every other business was doing, asking for help. The last few weeks of 2020 gave us few new offerings to stream, except for all those Christmas carols, but there were countless pleas from virtually every nonprofit company for one more contribution. Nothing is too small. Now, these sounded dire, and in fact, they are, if this goes on too much longer. People who are fortunate enough to still offer support had a lot of choices. Do I give to a pair of Georgia Democrats who've already broken all records for fundraising? Or do I help the Second Stage or Signature or Ars Nova or Eden Theater or fill in the name of your local company, which have managed to give us entertainment, albeit of the Zoomed and archival variety during this time? Well, to survive or not to survive, that remains the question. And more local, state, and federal funding can't come soon enough, not to mention vaccinations, to get people back in those seats. So this week, I don't have much to suggest, but there are always a few goodies. Now, through mid-January, for example, 54 Below is offering Sondheim Unplugged. This is a streaming of a newly cast concert. Sondheim Unplugged was in its 10th year when all was shut down. And $25 seems a bargain for any chance to enjoy that man's music and lyrics. Stars in the House has been one of the most ingenious during this time in getting big names to do live readings, mostly to support the Actors Fund. For the next few weeks, Seth Rudetsky will be hosting everything from game nights to concerts and discussions. Check out Stars in the House for that. Speaking of the Actors Fund, more than $1 million has been raised by the TikTok presentation of Disney's Ratatouille. This feels like one of those, hey, let's put on a show, Judy Garland, Mickey Rooney movies. But you know what? Some well-known performers came together and they put this up. Musicals, as you know, can take years to do so. This non-animated version only runs through tonight, I'm afraid. So assuming you know how to TikTok, enjoy. The Rattlestick Theater has become the latest to present radio plays, something we previously thought was from the days of Orson Welles, but they came roaring back in 2020, none more so than via LA Theater Works, which has an archive trove like no other. The offering from Rattlestick's company is a series of mini plays, which last from 3 to 10 minutes, each inspired by a stop on a particular subway. They don't say people aren't thinking outside the box, or even outside the MTA's window. Speaking of which, if you check out Ticket Central's site or go to publictheater.org, you can learn about the Under the Radar Festival of free new works being streamed starting Wednesday, January 6th through January 17th. These pieces have names like Capsule, Rich Kids, and Border Crossings. Anything the Public Theater participates in is usually worth checking out. Finally, something called I Hate It Here has just come up and will be available to watch through March. Here, a group of actors in their own boxes perform short pieces that feel very 2020-ish. They're all written by one Ike Holder and can be found on studiotheater.org. Now, as I've said here before, the companies have smartly used this time to also become more inclusive, both in planning hoped-for future seasons and in their own hiring practices. Even the Mint Theater, which, by the way, has just started streaming 6 of its shows, the first, Days to Come, was written by Lillian Hellman, has been putting out an occasional newsletter telling the stories of long-forgotten playwrights of color. The current one focuses on Zora Neale Hurston. Most of us recall that she was part of the Harlem Renaissance group of poets and authors. Well, turns out Hurston wrote at least 8 plays, the first a one-act in 1925 called Color Struck. Well, I hope when theater goes live again, the Mint will find a way to produce one of her works. Now, she, of course, has been long gone, but there was much sadness in the theatrical community throughout last year, with many notable deaths that I've mentioned here. The last I discussed was Anne Reinking a few weeks back. Well, since then, two caught my attention. A successful businessman named Roger Berlind lost his wife and three children in a plane crash in 1975. And then he decided to turn his life around and follow his true passion, which, lucky for us, turned out to be theater. He became an investor and producer and ended up winning some 25 Tonys, including for the Book of Mormon. One of the stages inside the McCarter Theater in Princeton is actually named for him. Roger Berlind died last week at the age of 90. Now, that obit received a large feature in the papers, but I'm often most intrigued by the smaller ones, those that families and friends purchase, because the deceased isn't considered bold-faced enough. For example, Lee Wallace, whose name I did not know, but his face was familiar, so I read his small obit. Well, he was born in Brooklyn and died December 20th in New York. Here was a man who seemed to never stop doing what he loved without ever being what would be called a star or even leading man. He studied acting with Lee Strasberg. He did regional theater, off-Broadway, and even a few on. He did movies and commercials and was married for 45 years to an actress. Well, as the obit said, Lee Wallace was proud to say he'd lived his whole life as a working actor. Amen to that. And speaking of longtime love of theater, I wrote a piece last week about two men whose story touched me. Arnold Margolin is 85 and Peter Levin is 88. Now, Levin was an aspiring actor in the mid-50s when he auditioned for Garson Kanin, who was about to direct a new play on Broadway called The Diary of Anne Frank. The audition was brief and Kanin said, "You'll do," and cast him as Peter Van Dam, the neighbor boy who was hidden along with the Franks. He actually did it under the name of David Levin at the time, because it turned out there was a Peter Levin already in Equity. Anyway, he did the show for 10 months and was then drafted. So Kanin asked assistant stage manager Arnold Margolin to take over. He did it for a year, and then he was drafted. Now, unbeknownst to each other, the two men eventually moved west and went on to very successful careers in television. Margolin created Love American Style, among many others. Levin directed more than 30 movies of the week. They did not really know each other until a writer-producer invited them both to a dinner party in Hollywood in 1995. They got along nicely that night, then again went their separate ways for decades. Well, they recently discovered that both had returned to New York and living close to one another. So they got together twice at Katharine Hepburn Gardens, appropriately enough, to sit on a bench and chat, and another time to take a stroll. Now, of course, they are pretty isolated, but are looking forward to more when normalcy returns. In the meantime, although they both made their biggest marks in TV, they still love stage the best. Margolin has just finished writing a play, which Levin read and loved. And Levin told me, "I so miss the theater. It's what I loved as a young man and what I still love as an old one." Well, it's rare enough for us to maintain friendships at this time, Jill, let alone make new ones, right?
Practice, 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 as the old saying goes.
Yeah, yeah.
No, anyway. I think that's one of the main things that is going to you know, I am somewhat optimistic about the future and this being over soon,
yeah,
so that people can get back to the human contact aspect. I think the one thing that this has shown is the difference between live theater and watching live theater on a screen. And I think that, you know, I am hopeful that will be remembered for years to come.
I agree with you. And listen, you're in an area where, you know, they have definitely tried to do that in different forms. And people, as we've talked about before, you can do that when you're outside cities in a way and you have more outdoor space literally to do it in, but you can't. It's hard to do in the winter, I guess. But I don't know. Yeah, I'm feeling some of your optimism. We'll see as we start this new year. You know, it still feels pretty. This is going to be a tough month for so many reasons.
Right. And then I guess it is only necessary to say also, just a reminder, January was also just the month of Broadway, by and large, you know, if a show was not going to survive, it became defunct in the month of January. You know, I mean, even though it was always a happy closing, it's like 2,000 performances, 520 performances left. You know, it was all very exciting, but it was also very, like, over.
Yeah, well, I have still have my notes from the last play I saw. I looked it up in my calendar, which I just tossed out because it was empty from 2020. The last show I saw was March 14th, I believe, called The Minutes, written by, I still have my notes, so if it comes back up,
did you like
Tracy
it?
Letts. But that was it. And then I looked at my calendar, and the next week was just XXXXX because I had all these plays that I was going to see. So we're never going to forget that. But, yeah, we'll see what comes back and what doesn't. And will the Tony Awards happen? They gave the nominations. I'm still waiting for some announcement on that, but I guess everybody's got other things to worry about.
How long ago did they give the nominations? Wasn't that ages ago?
That was October. It was, like the end of October, and saying, and very excited, you know, gave all the nominations. It was all over the internet, at least, and said they were just waiting to find out when they would do an actual show, virtual show, obviously, and who the host would, you know. It sounded like it was kind of imminent, and that was October, November, December, well, 3 months, I don't know. The fact that it's, you know, my prediction, I hate to say this, and I hope I'm wrong, and I probably am wrong. I was going to say, wouldn't it be odd if they just ended up skipping it and doing the regular one in June and just putting the two seasons together? I don't know. You know, the longer these things are delayed,
yeah, the more they lose their it's but I'm sure that smarter heads will prevail, and they'll go, hey, wait, you know, maybe this is the way to do it. You know,
yeah,
it will be revived. Let's just say I'm not speaking the Tony Awards specifically, but
theater life
will be revived with with some thought.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's no doubt it's coming back. And look, I think they've had plagues before. Shakespeare wrote a couple of good plays,
right?
In one of them.
No pun intended, right?
Shakespeare
That's right. wrote a couple of good plagues.
Plays from the plagues. Oh, there you go.
Yep.
Anyway, so onward we go.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.